Blog Talk Radio.
Pulp Friction with Paul Levine, where the spoken word meets the written word and sparks will fly.
Hey, hello everybody. Good evening. This is Paul Levine coming to you tonight from the mountains of Western North Carolina, where, believe it or not, we have bears rambling, gamboling, if that's the word, in our backyard, four bears. But we're not here to talk about that. We're not even here to talk about me. We're here to talk to the guru of self-publishing, somebody who has made a name for himself both in the traditional world of New York publishing and now in the new world, the brave new world of self-publishing. And I'm talking about Joel Goldman. Joel, are you there?
I am, Paul, and thanks for having me. And as long as we're telling wild animal stories, we had a coyote pass through our yard yesterday evening. We live right off the Coyote Freeway.
I can
sympathize with your bears.
I didn't know, and Joel is from Kansas City. I spent 13 years in Studio City, just outside of Los Angeles in the hills, and we had lots of coyotes who were completely fearless. They were so used to people, they would devour the neighborhood cats, I'm sorry to say, and would stare down the dogs that would be barking at them. Anyway, you're safe and sound?
Yeah, and we have two little cockapoos, about 20-pound dogs, who like to chase the coyotes out of our yard. So it seems like they've reached some kind of an understanding.
Excellent for them and for you.
All right. Yeah.
Let me tell you a couple of things about Joel Goldman. We actually have a lot in common. We are both former trial lawyers who turned to crime fiction and have had careers with some measure of success and won awards. We both were published by major New York publishers and have both turned to self-publishing. And here's a little known fact. Both of us were in the running for the lead in the movie Wolverine that Hugh Jackman got. You remember that, Joel.
Yeah, but the problem was we were going to have to play it together like the two guys in the horse's suit.
Two guys in a horse's suit equals one Hugh Jackman. All right. Other than the Hugh Jackman anecdote, everything I've said is true. Joel, let's talk about, first of all, your transition from being a trial lawyer to being a crime fiction novelist. How did that come about?
Well, you know, Paul, you remember from your days practicing law how law partners get along so well with one another. I had back in June of 1992, 21 years ago, one of my best friends in my law firm came to me one day and he poured his heart out complaining about another partner. And then when he was done, he looked at me for my advice. How was I going to solve his problem? And I didn't hesitate. I looked at him and I said, let's just write a murder mystery. We'll kill the son of a bitch off in the first chapter and spend the rest of the book figuring out who did it. And I was just kidding, but that's actually literally how it got started. And a short time after that, I decided to start writing the book. That book was became Motion to Kill, my first book in the Lou Mason thriller series. And it was published in 2002 by Kensington Publishing.
Mm-hmm.
That made me a 10-year overnight success.
You didn't actually kill your law partner in real life. You only did it in fiction.
Well, you know, all these books come with disclaimers, you know,
right.
So that was certainly one of the disclaimers.
Right.
There was a partner who ended up dead on the first page of that book. And then I had several more books published in that series, three more books.
Last Witness, Cold Truth, and Deadlocked. Am I getting warm here?
Yeah, you're getting warm. Those were the first four books in that series. Then in 2004, I developed a movement disorder called TICS, T-I-C-S, which is very similar to Tourette's, and it causes uncontrollable shaking and spasming and stuttering, which may work for some trial lawyers, but didn't work for me. And as a consequence of that, I had the opportunity to be a full-time crime writer.
Well, you turned a negative or some challenge in your life, as many people do, into something positive.
We don't get to choose a lot that happens in our lives, but we do get to choose how we deal with them.
Exactly. Well said.
I was fortunate to have already been published and had the opportunity to fulfill the rest of that dream and be a full-time writer.
Did you not even use the medical condition which you developed in your fiction, in your writing?
Well, I did. About 2005, my publisher asked me to start a new series, and that's when I was, you know, in the transitioning in my life with this disorder, and so I created my second series, the Jack Davis Thrillers. Jack Davis is a former FBI agent in his early mid-50s, who in the midst of a very difficult, dangerous case develops my movement disorder. So I gave him the disorder as a way for me to kind of process the changes that I was going through, and because it was an interesting challenge for a character, you know, somebody who is fighting the bad guys and sometimes shakes when he should shoot. So
makes it more difficult.
Yeah, it is.
I think readers and viewers of television and movies appreciate a protagonist who is not a superhero. In real life, we have problems and challenges that we deal with, and shouldn't our fictional heroes, to be realistic, also have some things to deal with?
Well, they're a lot more interesting characters, mm-hmm. and readers can identify or empathize with them because they can recognize a little bit of their own lives in those characters, how they deal with challenge, how they deal with setbacks and catastrophe and whatever else. It just makes it more interesting. I mean, even Superman had to deal with kryptonite.
Right. And don't each of us in our own lives have our own personal kryptonite?
Yeah, absolutely. So,
Davis series, which started with Shakedown, I believe, correct?
Right.
The Dead Man.
And the third book in that series is No Way Out.
I love that title. So we're dealing really in the thicket of crime fiction. The Lou Mason series, which I neglected to mention, has been nominated for both an Edgar and a Seamus Award.
Thank you.
Or Seamus, depending how you pronounce it, and people pronounce it differently. Jack Davis, the FBI agent, with the challenge. And there's yet a third series, which I find even more interesting and challenging for the writer. And why would I say that, Joel?
Well, this series features a woman named Alex Stone. I decided to create this character and write this series for a couple of reasons. One, I had not written a series with a female lead protagonist. There are plenty mm-hmm. of women characters in the books, but
right.
it's different when you're writing your protagonist is of the opposite gender, and I wanted to mm-hmm. I wanted that challenge as a writer. And secondly, she is a scrappy public defender whose fundamental values and beliefs are challenged when a client whom she wins an acquittal for in a murder case goes on a killing spree. And then she lives the nightmare of a criminal defense lawyer, one of two nightmares, the first being your innocent client gets convicted and sent to jail, and the second is you get your guilty client off, and that client goes on the rampage. And
what an excellent summary. Excellent summary of the dilemma of the criminal defense lawyer. The innocent person gets convicted, or your guilty client goes free.
Those are the nightmares that would keep a criminal defense lawyer awake. And I wanted to explore, you know, we'd read a lot of books and seen a lot of books about the innocent person wrongly convicted. We read in the newspapers all the time about people who are freed years later after exoneration by DNA evidence. Mm-hmm. I wanted to come at it from a different angle, where the guilty goes free, and then there are terrible consequences, and what impact that has on Alex Stone.
Well, I admire greatly the job you've done with creating that character, and it's funny how our careers mirror each other in so many ways. I had not written a female lead character until the Solomon versus Lord series, and I had to do Victoria Lord as a co-protagonist, which gave me a little bit more of a cushion. But you went out on the high wire, and you said, "Hey, I'm a middle-aged guy lawyer, but I'm going to be able to write this female defense lawyer," and you do it so well.
Thank you so much.
And with that, I'm going to take a call. Caller in area code 619, are you there?
I am.
And do you have a question for Joel Goldman?
I do. I'm curious how Joel deals with writer's block.
All right.
Well, you know, I'm going to confess that I've been very fortunate and not really had a problem with that. And I suppose that's partly luck, but I think it's also partly the way that I approach my writing. As far as I'm concerned, I'm writing all the time, whether I'm at the keyboard or not. I believe in a concept of creativity that I call the discipline of the undisciplined mind. And you have to make time in your day when your mind just wanders. You have to let it wander, but you got to pay attention where it's wandering to, and you got to let things develop. And I even do that in those final moments between wakefulness and sleep, which I think can be a real creative period, a short one. But, you know, I'm always thinking about it, and stuff is ruminating around in there, and I have... I'm lucky I haven't been afflicted by the terror of the blank page.
That's a great answer. I've been asked that very question many times, and it sometimes I come up with maybe it's a little bit of a flip answer, but I say, well, if the mortgage is due, I won't have writer's block. For the listener, are you having a problem with writer's block?
I am at times, yes. When I'm under the gun and I have to write, I find my writer's block to be most strong. I think it's when Joel said that, you know, when you're just waking up and getting going, that he kind of gets his groove on. I'm thinking that's an approach that I might actually try, because, you know, when you're forced to do something right at that moment, I feel like I get a little paralyzed. So it's
I'll give you another suggestion. This is two versions of the same thing. One comes from one of my dear friends, a great crime writer, Nancy Picard, and the other comes from another friend of mine who's just writes a fabulous series, Lee Child. The Jack Reacher series. And Nancy always liked to say, in answer to that question, whenever she gets stuck, she just throws a dead body in. And that keeps things moving. And then what Lee Child says he does with Jack Reacher is he just puts him in an impossible situation and waits to see how Reacher gets out of it. So, you know, you can take that kind of approach. Conflict drives every story. So... if you're stuck, create a conflict.
Well, I'm going to pick a bone with Nancy Picard on that, because I think she borrowed a line from Raymond Chandler, who, not specifically speaking about writer's block, but I think he was quoted as saying, when things get slow in your story, bring in a man with a gun.
Well, there you go.
And Stephen J. Cannell used to say, both in relation to his television writing and his novel writing, that when you get bogged down, always go to the villain. Always go to the villain.
Great advice. So
there you have it. Thank you for that call. Did you want to add anything else before Joel and I move on?
Nope, I'm good. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your call.
Mm-hmm.
So, Joel, let's... we're talking about Alex Stone, the third of your three series, and the listeners all ought to know that if they want to start with the Joel Goldman series of books, where ought they start? Should they start with Lou Mason, Jack Davis, Alex Stone?
Well, the answer is you should just buy them all, and then you don't have to.
Buy them all. Go on to Amazon today.
Then that relieves you of any, you know, conflict on that subject. But I would say each series is different. Each protagonist is different. And so it sort of depends on what your taste is at the moment. Every writer, I think, always favors their first series, their first book, was first. Their most recent, because it's the most recent. And for me, the Jack Davis series is special because it's so personal to me. So if you want to have a great story with an insight into me, my life, then read the Jack Davis series. If you want to see read about a guy who is not afraid to dive into the dark water to go after the bad guys, read the Lou Mason series. And if you want to see how someone deals with some of the toughest dilemmas, personal and ethical, that a criminal defense lawyer can confront, Alex Stone is your choice.
Well, many, many choices, many voices. Let's segue from those series into an issue that many of our listeners, many people who are going to be listening to this as it is archived on Blog Talk Radio and on Authors on the Air for a long time, a lot of people are interested in, and that is the changes that have been going on in the publishing world, and you are in the forefront of this as somebody traditionally published who has become a very substantial success in the world of self-publishing. How in the world did that happen?
Well, I guess I should write a thank you note to Apple if Apple ends up being convicted in the antitrust case and ends up getting all the credit for creating this, or maybe you send a thank you note to Amazon. There were two things that happened several years ago that changed the landscape forever. The first was the Kindle. The introduction of that piece of hardware is a game changer of historic dimensions. And the second thing that changed was the way in which Amazon paid royalties. In traditional publishing, my books came out as paperback originals, selling for $7. I earned an 8% royalty. 15% of that went to my agent. So I was clearing about 47.5 cents per book. When I got the rights back to those books 2 years ago and began selling them on Amazon for $4 a piece, I was getting, and am getting, a 70% royalty on that same book without anyone taking a cut of my 70%. So I've gone from, overnight, I went from making 47 cents a book to $2.80 a book. So the
first, even those of us not good at math, can see the logic in that, as long as you can sell your books that are
right
on Kindle.
Right. So the first thing that happened was there was a new business model. And that business model would be a great platform if, as Paul says, people can find your books and you can convince them to buy your books. And I have been very fortunate. I got some, before I ever released my first book, I spent 6 months researching this market, trying to understand it, and working with a consultant who taught me a lot about how Amazon worked. And taught me some rudimentary stuff about how Google AdWords worked. And so when I started 2 years ago this month releasing Motion to Kill, I had the outline of a business plan and a marketing strategy, which I've refined over the last 2 years. And I've tried to be as businesslike about it as I can, and I've used Google AdWords to help support sales and get sales going, and that helped the books get good rankings in Amazon and take advantage of the Amazon recommendation system. And then I've coupled that with a robust social media marketing effort, and all of those things combined have kept the wind at my back.
Well, let me play devil's advocate here. From everything you say, it sounds like it takes you a lot of time away from writing the books to do marketing, social media, advertising, business plans. These are not words that authors, John Updike and Philip Roth were not dealing with this in the 1960s and 70s.
Well, that's because they had a traditional publisher doing it for them. Mm-hmm. But if you want to be a successful self-publisher, you're going to have to be a successful business person. There are always going to be stories of people who just put their books up on Amazon, and the next thing they know, the Brinks truck is pulling up to their front door to drop off the bags of money. But those stories are outliers. You know, mm-hmm. It's like every kid who gets a basketball for Christmas thinks they're going to be the next Michael Jordan or LeBron James, and those folks only come along once in a generation. So you have to be prepared to invest in yourself, to invest in your business. I've been very fortunate and successful enough that I've been able to enlist the help of professionals who really know what they're doing. To help me with, you know, these non-writing responsibilities. So I have a wonderful manager of my Google AdWords campaign. Does a great job. Her name is Ann Haynes. I have a great team that helps me on the marketing side with all my with my website and social media and all of those things. But it still takes more of my time than I would like, and that's a particular challenge for me because as a result of my movement disorder, I'm not able to put in the full long days like I did when I was practicing law. So it becomes it is a balancing act. It is a trade-off. You have to work in your business and on your business, but you have to be committed to being successful. If you don't do those things, it's going to be a lot harder for people to discover you and for you to succeed.
What advice then, Joel, would you give? And here we're not talking about the writing advice, which you do so well on your blog. And by the way, let me tell the listeners that joelgoldman.com is where you ought to go to get additional information about Joel, his books, his blog on writing and publishing and related subjects. But now, what advice would you give to the aspiring writer who has not yet published with a traditional publisher? They're writing a novel. They've been working on it for 3 years because they've got another job in writing and rewriting and rewriting. Their friends have gone over it. Should this person be aiming for a book contract with Random House, or should they be aiming for self-publishing and self-advertising and social marketing?
I wish I could tell you there was a clear-cut answer to that. I think there are arguments to be made on both sides, And I meet with people all the time who ask me those questions. And I begin by asking them what their objective is. What do they want from their writing? If it is something that they want to pursue to earn a living, it's really tough to do that in this in the traditional publishing marketplace today, because publishers are cutting back on the number of authors they're publishing, they're cutting back on the print runs or the books they are publishing, and they're cutting back on the advances for their authors. So it's even more difficult than it ever has ever been to be traditionally published and to be financially successful. And, you know, Guy Kawasaki, who is a great authority on this subject far more than I am, he'll tell you that if your objective is to make a lot of money, you're in it for the wrong reason, because most writers won't. But
that's always been true. I mean, we're bemoaning the fact that in traditional publishing, advances are down, the number of authors are down, budgets are down, publicists, the publicity staffs have been pared to the bone. We're bemoaning those facts, but it's always been true that to make your living doing that, if you don't have tenure at a great university or a trust fund or a spouse that is supporting you, it has always been difficult. Now, as Joel says, even more difficult in that world. But as I think you're also saying, it's no piece of cake in self-publishing.
It's not, but the biggest difference is that you have control over that process. And that's what increases your odds of success, of having that control. So what I tell people who are in your hypothetical person who's got that first novel and they're just about done with it, the first thing that I tell them is to apply the same standards of professionalism to their book that a traditional publisher does. And that means investing in a developmental editor who will read your book and tell you what works and what doesn't, and be objective about it, which your friends and family never will be able to do. And then invest in a professional copy editor to get all the grammar and syntax and spelling and punctuation right, and then invest in a professional cover artist who will give you the kind of cover that will help sell the book, that's essential to sell the book. So the first piece of advice is be professional and take your manuscript, the love of your life, and turn it into a professional book. That's my first piece of advice.
I heard the word investment a lot in your advice. There's a lot that goes into this.
It's not as much as people might think. Based on my experience working with top-flight developmental editors, copy editors, cover artists, and then someone to format the book for either print-on-demand or an e-book, you can be all in and all done for that in the $2,500 to $3,000 range. So it's not a staggering sum, and everybody has to evaluate their own resources and the choices they have to make. But the last thing you want to do is put something up on Amazon that looks like a piece of junk.
Well, that's a great point. That's a great point, because if you get off on the wrong foot, and if your reputation early on is that your manuscript is full of typos, or there are plot lines that go nowhere, or boy, what a stinky cover! It looks amateurish. You're going nowhere fast.
Yeah, you're done. You're done. And then the next thing that I tell people is, look, if you just have one book and this is your first book, you cannot afford to do all of the marketing things and advertising things that I'm doing, because it's just disproportionate for a single book. Even if you've just got piles of money sitting around, it's not a business-like approach. If you pick up Guy Kawasaki's book, Ape, Author, Publisher, Entrepreneur, or David Gogren's book, Let's Get Visible, you'll get great advice on a number of little or no cost methods of publicizing your book and enhancing the discoverability of your book. And you have to accept that this is a marathon, it's not a sprint. So you're going to be building your audience slowly over time and be persistent and then keep putting out content. There aren't very many one-hit wonders who've been extraordinarily successful, notwithstanding Catcher in the Rye and Gone with the Wind and To Kill a Mockingbird.
But three pretty nice examples. Let me ask you this. There may be people out there, I'm sure there are, who do not necessarily want to make or think they can make a career out of this, but they think they have one book in them. Does your advice differ with them? I mean, surely they're not going to be going out and hiring consultants and all of that, but they have a book inside them that they want people to read. What would they do?
Well, and that's why, Paul, it's a great question, and that's why I ask people when I meet with them, what's your objective? And people do say to me exactly what you said. I just really want to write this book, or this is my memoir, and I want it for my kids, or this is just something I feel very passionately about. And my advice as to the first step would still be the same, because if it's that important to you, it's important enough to do it right. And that means being professional about it with editors and cover artists and formatters and so forth. And then the next step is, the next thing I would say is, do what you want to do to make people find your book. Don't feel as though you have to devote 8 hours a day to be on Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus and Pinterest and Goodreads and all the other social media sites and that sort of thing. You'll drive yourself crazy. Pick one or two at the most, and spend some time really trying to engage with people, because this is not about how many Facebook likes you have or Twitter followers you have, or communities and circles on G+. It's about engaging with people.
I've noticed on your Facebook page, you frequently ask your Facebook friends questions as opposed to pontificating to them or telling them, as I do, that I have bears in my backyard.
Well, you know what? Questions are great. Questions are great because, you know, they invite answers, and that invites engagement. But you would be surprised at how much people are interested in the fact that you have bears in your backyard. And the reason is a lot of readers, and I count myself in this category, want to feel like they've got a relationship with the author, that they have some kind of a connection with the author. And knowing some of the mundane or ordinary things that are going on in the author's life is a real interest to readers, and they feel engaged about it. And, you know, I've noticed that on Facebook, in terms of the number of people who might see a post or might comment on a post or like a post, oftentimes, the posts that are completely unrelated to reading or writing or publishing really resonate with people.
I find, in fact, that my posts about food get more comments than anything else. And in that vein, I should tell tonight's listeners that for the first time in my life, I had pickled fried green tomatoes at a restaurant in Asheville, North Carolina tonight. I've had lots of fried green tomatoes, but never pickled fried green tomatoes slathered with pimento cheese.
Oh,
and
my God.
That may end up on Facebook tomorrow.
Yeah, and it's already lining your arteries, so there you go.
Yes.
It's like a double hit.
Yes. Well, in that case, we'd better proceed toward the end of the interview to make sure that I make it that far.
Yeah.
We are talking to Joel Goldman, You can find his work many different ways. You can go onto Amazon.com, plug in the name Joel Goldman, plug in Motion to Kill, or The Last Witness, or the names of his characters, Lou Mason, Jack Davis, Alex Stone. The Jack Davis thriller, No Way Out, again, love the title. You can go onto Facebook and follow Joel and respond and interact with him. Joel, as we wrap it up, anything else that you would like to add? Have I missed anything that you think either aspiring writers or interested readers ought to know?
Well, you've been good enough to mention all my books and my website and everything else about 50 times, and if we have any time at the end, if you could just repeat that like a loop and fill up any empty time, that would be terrific. But absent that, you know, what I would tell an aspiring writer, probably the best piece of advice that I could give, and it kind of harkens back to your earlier question about should they try to go the traditional or self-published route, focus first on your craft. That was advice that was given to me by one of my favorite writers, George Pelicanos, who's written terrific crime novels set in Washington, D.C., and was one of the lead writers for the HBO series The Wire. And I used to bug the hell out of George asking him to give me blurbs endorsing my books. And, you know, he said two things to me. First, he said, couldn't I just buy you a beer instead? And the other thing that he said is, look, don't worry about all of that stuff. Don't worry about the blurbs. Don't worry about anything except writing the best book that you can. And I think that advice holds true. Because until you've written the best possible book you can, you really shouldn't be thinking about anything else. When you're done with that, then you can turn your attention to all the other things. And I just think keeping your eye on that ball and learning your craft and being patient and persistent is the best advice that I could give to a startup lawyer or a writer.
Well, and the advice would probably hold true with lawyers, too. Pay attention to your craft. I could not have put it any better, any more concisely. It's a great place to end, except I'm going to add one sentence, and it's a quote from your character, Alex Stone, the female public defender. Every day is a knife fight. She did say that, didn't she?
Yeah, she sure did. Every day is a knife fight, which means you better come ready.
You better come ready. Thank you, Joel Goldman. This has been a great treat, and people will be bugging you, I am sure, and I hope, for even more advice, and following you on Facebook and following your various series, which I'm not going to mention anymore. And stay away from those coyotes in Kansas City.
Paul,
thank you again.
Thanks so much for having me.
Enjoyed it.
Okay, take care.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, everybody, that concludes Pulp Friction for tonight. This was recorded live on Sunday night, June 23rd. Next week, a real treat with the sports writer, television writer, essayist John Shulian, and we hope that you will be here then. Good night, everybody.